All righty. Okay, we are in chapter 51. Chapters 50 and 51, two very long chapters dealing with the destruction of Tribulation Babylon. And last week we saw some pictures. God drew some word pictures for us that described the destruction of Babylon. One of them was this mighty wind. And the picture was a man winnowing his wheat. And here in this picture we have a gentle wind that is, you know, blowing the chaff away while the heavy wheat will fall to the ground and not be blown away. But the picture last week was that God is going to bring a mighty wind upon Babylon and sweep this whole threshing floor clean. Nothing of any value will be left. We also learned that he was going to bring the northern army upon Babylon and bring the soldiers into her like a flock of locusts, huh? What a picture. Of course, everyone in the Middle East would understand what he's talking about. This needs to be a moving picture and noise and bugs flying by our head for us to get an idea what's going on here. But these are the soldiers from the Northern Alliance coming in. Okay, now we've been looking at basically the first three stages, the first three steps of the campaign of Armageddon. So let's review those really quickly. First of all, stage number one, step number one, the Antichrist armies assemble at Armageddon. And of course, Armageddon is the Valley of Jezreel right here in northern Israel. So representatives from all the nations of the world, representatives, soldiers, military equipment, whatever, will gather in the Jezreel Valley. Every nation in the world will be represented there at that time. So we have the armies assembling. The second stage of the campaign of Armageddon is that the Antichrist joins his troops, and we'll see that very clearly today. He is in his capital of Babylon, but then he leaves his capital, and he wants to personally command his troops in the Jezreel Valley. That opens the door to the third stage, which is the destruction of Babylon, what we've been reading about and studying for the last weeks in chapters 50 and 51. In chapter 51, verses 27 and 28, we got a more detailed look at the invasion. We got a glimpse at the four major players, the kingdoms of Arat, the peoples in Mini, the nations of Ashkenaz, which is the Baltic area, the Eastern Europe, will all send troops into that area. Now, this will not surprise Antichrist because the movement of troops all around the world will be happening because he ordered it. He ordered the armies to assemble at Armageddon. So movement of troops will not surprise him. What will surprise him is that the Medes, the fourth major group, will take over the leadership of this army, and instead of going to the Jezreel Valley, they will come south. They will come upon Babylon from the north. And with the help of God, Babylon will be quickly and suddenly decimated. That's the idea here. Okay? Babylon will be gone. Okay? That picks us up at page 554 then. We left that off last week on verse 28. As we move to verse 29, God issues a decree. When God issues a decree, you know, whatever he's talking about is guaranteed. It will happen. So let's take a look at the decree of God in verse 29, chapter 51. Everybody there? Okay, verse 29. So the land quakes and rise, for the purposes of the Lord against Babylon stand, to make the land of Babylon a desolation without inhabitants. Point one, the first phrase, the land quakes and rise, or as your notes say, trembles and is in pain. I think that this is just a little glimpse at all the tribulation earthquakes. You know, the tribulation period will be characterized by earthquakes. It will not be a fun time. Here are, I think there's five cross references I'm going to share with you here. Revelation 6:12. I looked when he broke the sixth seal, and there was what? A great earthquake. And the sun became black as sackcloth and made of hair, and the whole moon became like blood. So we have a great earthquake in chapter 6. We have a blackout in chapter 6. There will be world wars during the tribulation. There will be blackouts during the tribulation, earthquakes during the tribulation. We are not in the tribulation, folks, today. Some people teach that. We are not in it. If this is the tribulation, folks, we are coasting, okay? All right, Revelation 6:12. Drop down to chapter 8, verse 5. Similar statement. Revelation 8:5. Then the angel took the censer and filled it with the fire of the altar and threw it to the earth. And there followed peals of thunder and sounds and flashes of lightning and an earthquake. Revelation 8:5. Second earthquake mentioned on planet Earth. Revelation 11:13. Revelation 11:13. This concerns Jerusalem. The two witnesses have just been resurrected and have ascended to the Lord. And in that hour there was a great earthquake, and a tenth of the city, that's Jerusalem, fell. 7,000 people were killed in the earthquake, and the rest were terrified and gave glory to the God of heaven. So this is part of that softening up process of our stubborn Jewish hearts. You know, now the people in Jerusalem are giving glory to the God of heaven. They're losing their atheism, aren't they? Losing their agnosticism. So Revelation 11:13, an earthquake is part of that. Revelation 11:19, dropping down to verse 19. Revelation 11:19. And the temple of God, which is in heaven, was opened, and the ark of his covenant appeared in his temple. And there were flashes of lightning and sounds and peals of thunder and an earthquake and a great hailstorm. So when the temple of God is opened in heaven, the true heavenly temple, there's effects on the earth, and the earth shudders. And finally, Revelation 16:18. Revelation 16:18. And there were flashes of lightning and sounds and peals of thunder, and there was a great earthquake, such as had not been since man came to be upon the earth. So great an earthquake was it, and so mighty. So it's going to be a number 10 on the Richter scale, right? It's going to blow the Richter scale off its scale there. Anyway, the earthquakes will characterize the tribulation period, and that's the point, I think, of verse 29. The earth trembles and rise about. And why? Well, the reason why is the second part of the verse there, because God has a purpose against Babylon that stands. God's decree against Babylon will not be repealed. There's not going to be a recount. There's, as somebody said in the morning class, no hanging chads with this one, okay? It stands. It stands. God will do this. And what is he going to do? Verse 30. He repeats, he's going to destroy Babylon. Verse 30. The mighty men of Babylon have ceased fighting. They stay in the strongholds. Their strength is exhausted. They are becoming like women. Their dwelling places are set on fire. The bars of her gates are broken. So we have a description of the defeat of Babylon. First of all, the mighty men have come in view. These are the soldiers, the defenders. Point A, they remain in their strongholds. This tells us that they have no courage. No courage. When they see the army from the north coming against them, they are going to hunker down in their bunkers. They're going to take a retreat mentality. They're going to hunker down in their bunkers and stay there. Why do they do that? One reason, their might has failed. They have no strength. And see, they have become as women. Now, God is not being anti-women, anti-feminist here. The point here is that women were not foot soldiers, were not soldiers in this day and age. They were not trained in warfare. So they were basically helpless. They could not provide any resistance to an incoming army. That's the idea here. These soldiers have no more courage. They have no more strength. They cannot resist. And so they are conquered quickly and easily. And so she's burned and destroyed. Okay, as all this is going on, it's usually polite to inform the leader of your country if something like this is going on. And so that's what happens in verse 31. There's a message sent to the king of Babylon. First part of verse 31. One courier runs to meet another. One messenger to meet another to tell the king of Babylon. All right, so here we see messengers are being sent out in a relay to Antichrist to inform him of what's happening. What does that tell us? Tells us that Antichrist is not in Babylon when it gets destroyed. If he's there and he sees his soldiers hunkering down in the bunker and the army coming in, he needs no messengers to tell him what's going on. He'd get it figured out himself. Okay? So he needs messengers to tell him what's happening. Where is he? He's at Armageddon. He's in the Valley of Megiddo. He's joined his troops. So the message has to get to him. What's the message? Bottom of the page, verses 31b through 32, Babylon has fallen, and the details are on page 555. Verse 31, second part of verse 31. They tell the king of Babylon that the city has been captured from end to end. The fords also have been seized. They have burned the marshes with fire. The men of war are terrified. So that's the message to the king of Babylon. We have been decimated. Our soldiers, our defenders were useless. The city is gone. And so now it's appropriate to bring out another word picture describing Babylon. And this time she is described as the threshing floor in verse 33. Verse 33. For thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, the daughter of Babylon, and that's a reference to the inhabitants of Babylon, the daughter of Babylon is like a threshing floor. At the time it is stamped firm. Yet in a little while, the time of harvest will come to her. Now the picture here is of a threshing floor and of a threshing sledge. This was taken at Naot Kedumim, an ancient garden we'll be visiting in a biblical landscape reserve, I should say. Ancient garden is the literal translation that we'll be visiting in November. But you see in the background, you see the threshing floor and the wheat is all laid out there. And then a threshing sledge is placed over the wheat, the pile of wheat. And the threshing sledge was just a wooden platform of some sort with metal or rocks embedded in the wood. And then a man or kids or somebody, weights, would be put on the top of that board and it would be dragged over the wheat. How would you like to have that thing dragged over you? Well, that's what it'll do to the wheat. It'll totally decimate the wheat. Now, in this case, it has a good purpose. It separates the wheat from the chaff. But in the picture before us, it's a picture of Babylon being totally crushed. Totally crushed. The daughter of Babylon is like a threshing floor. She will be thoroughly threshed and crushed. As we come to point 18, in the middle of page 555, we see that our attention returns to Israel. And again, to repeat it, why does this happen? This happens because Israel's restoration comes at the same time of Babylon's destruction. Back and forth we go. Babylon and Israel, back and forth. One to be redeemed, one to be destroyed. Now, Israel's complaining and praying to the Lord. And even in a backslidden state here, God listens to Israel's prayer. God hears her prayer. A number of years ago, I think it was Jerry Falwell, somebody said, God doesn't listen to the prayers of the Jews. Well, he better read this verse here, because we just learned last week that even though the land was full of sin before the Lord, that Lord has not forsaken Israel. So we know that Israel is in a state of sin at this point of time. And what happens? God listens to her complaint. You'll see here him answer. So blanket statements like that, be suspicious of any blanket statements like that. Okay. All righty. Was that Jerry Falwell? If it was, I apologize, Jerry, if it was. Him or Pat Robertson, yeah. One of those heavy-duty media types. Anyway, whoever it was, I would take issue. God hears the prayer of anyone who is crying out to him in truth. And he moves to give that person more revelation, more light, even the light of salvation. Okay? All right, our attention returns to Israel. We look at Israel complaining. That's kind of typical of us. We're complaining. Okay, verse 34. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, has devoured me and crushed me. He has set me down like an empty vessel. He has swallowed me like a monster. He has filled his stomach with my delicacies. He has washed me away. Verse 34 deals with the crime of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, Israel is looking back here on her history. She's looking back over a history of suffering brought by Babylon. And we've just looked at that as we've gone through the book of Jeremiah. We've looked at that suffering in detail, what Babylon did to Israel in about 600 to 586 B.C. So what has Babylon done in the past? He has devoured me, probably a reference to conquering the land. Secondly, he has crushed me. Could very well be a reference to the destruction of Jerusalem. Third, he's made me an empty vessel. The population has been decimated, killed by war, famine, disease. So Israel is like an empty vessel, not much in it at all. Nebuchadnezzar only left a remnant in the land, didn't he? Just a remnant. Population has been emptied. Fourth, he has, like a monster, swallowed me up. I think this is a reference to the fact that Israel has no independent identity anymore. She's not an independent country anymore. She's just another Babylonian province under the rule of Nebuchadnezzar. No more independent identity, just a Babylonian province. Fifth, he has filled his maw with my delicacies. In other words, Israel has been stripped of her wealth. She has been plundered. And next week we'll take a look at some of that plundering as we go through the details of the artifacts in the temple being stolen, being taken as booty to Babylon.
What is a maw?
A maw mouth. Yeah. Or how is it translated in verse 34 in the NASB? He has filled his stomach with my delicacies. That's the idea. He's eaten them, you know, his guts. All right. And finally, sixth, he has cast me out. And that would be a reference to the exile to Babylon, the 70-year exile to Babylon. So that's the crimes of Nebuchadnezzar. That's the suffering in the past. Then comes the second part of the complaint in verse 35. Now Israel says, "May the violence done to me and to my flesh be upon Babylon. The inhabitant of Zion will say, and may my blood be upon the inhabitants of Chaldea. Jerusalem will say." Now, I think the point of verse 35 is that this is a cry for justice. Babylon has never experienced just recompense for her crimes against the Jewish people. She didn't suffer in the past, and it hadn't happened yet at this point in the tribulation. In the past, you know, the Medo-Persians conquered Babylon, but that was without a fight. The city wasn't destroyed. The city continued to prosper for many, many hundreds of years. And it just kind of faded out into a ghost town, and it's being rebuilt even today. Babylon has never experienced just recompense. And so this is a request for justice to be done. Well, that moves us to page 556, and the fact that God's listening to this request. And so he answers. He answers to the prophet Jeremiah, verse 36. Therefore, what is therefore there? You look back at the previous two verses. Because of what Babylon has done, because of this cry by the Jewish people, therefore, thus says the Lord, behold, I am going to plead your case and exact full vengeance for you. And I shall dry up her sea and make her fountain dry. So it's God who is going to bring just recompense upon Babylon. He says, behold, I will plead your cause. That's a legal term. He speaks of a reeve. A reeve is a legal case. And so the picture is again of a lawyer in a courtroom pleading the case of his client. And, of course, in this case, we have the best lawyer you could ever get. Nice to have God on your side, huh? Yep, nice to have him pleading your case. By the way, he's also the judge as well. He knows all sides of the story. He knows exactly the truth. And so, I will take vengeance for you. Just recompense will come upon Babylon during the tribulation period. That's one of the purposes for the tribulation. And this is another reason why she has to be rebuilt. Because this vengeance has to come. Justice has to come. And it's described as drying up her sea, making her fountain dry, pictures of the destruction coming upon her. But there's a literal aspect to that as well, because Revelation 16:12, point C2 there, does tell us that the Euphrates will literally be dried up. The sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river, the Euphrates, and its water was dried up so that the way would be prepared for the kings from the east. Now, in the context here, these kings from the east are heading toward Armageddon. They are being gathered for the great day of God Almighty there. They are being gathered. And so somehow, this drying up of the Euphrates prepares the way for them. I don't know why. No hint that I know of. But for some reason, it's an aid to their travel. It also may be an aid to the destruction of Babylon as well. Because when ancient Babylon was destroyed, or I should say captured, not destroyed, it was captured because the Medo-Persians diverted the Euphrates River. They diverted the river over into a lake, and so the river went down and opened up the sluiceway underneath the wall. And the soldiers just walked right in and captured the city basically by surprise and without a shot. And so this may somehow be compared to that, because what happened to ancient Babylon will be repeated in tribulation Babylon, only more severely. Okay? What happened to ancient Babylon is paralleled in tribulation Babylon, only much more severely. So this may be tied in with the destruction of Babylon and with the northern army as well. So God will bring revenge. And by the way, that's a good principle for all of us. Remember, we looked at the principle some time back that we are not to take revenge. Leave room for God to take revenge. You know, if we're going around with revenge and bitterness in our heart against people or things, we're in trouble. It's going to eat us up. It's going to eat us up. So we need to behave responsibly. But when it comes to revenge, if you find that in your heart, you better go to God and ask him to take it out of there. Take it out of there. Because he knows. And all wrongs will be made right. No matter what kind of bruise we've suffered in our lives, it doesn't matter what kind of wound we have, God knows someday it will be made right. Leave it to him. Leave it to him. You will, you know, revenge is the most empty of causes. It's the most empty of causes. Don't fall into that, okay? Listen to God. Let the Lord take care of it. That doesn't mean you don't act responsibly. Don't get me wrong here, you know. That doesn't mean we just sit back and are passive. Okay, just watch out for revenge in your heart. Okay, so God will bring revenge, and the results, verse 37, Babylon will become a heap of ruins, a haunt of jackals, an object of horror and hissing without inhabitants. Now, lest we think this refers to Babylon of the past, we see again that there are characteristics of this destruction that have never happened to Babylon of the past. First of all, she will become heaps. She will become ruined. Secondly, a dwelling place of jackals. And that word jackals is a word that nobody knows what it means. And so the NASB translated it jackals. The ASB translates it jackals. Other translations translate it as serpent, dragon, sea monster. Shows you that the translators are just exercising guesswork. We know what this word means in a general sense from other sections of Scripture. It means demons. Demons with animal-like features. So Babylon will become a place where the demons are confined during the kingdom. Hasn't happened yet. And then point C and D again describe the emotional horror of the observer and the sound that the observer makes, overwhelmed by the sight of burning Babylon. And then finally, point E, no people living there. That definitely has never happened. People have lived in that region up till the present. In verse 38, our attention shifts back to the defenders of Babylon and their outward courage. You'll see that their outward courage doesn't really mean much. Verse 38, this is totally consistent with the fact that they hide away in their bunkers. Verse 38, they roar together like young lions. They will growl like lions' cubs. So this sounds great, but this is the posturing of the young and the inexperienced. Cubs, lions, whelps. You know, those cute little things you hold in your arms, you know, and they grow up to be 200 pounds and eat you up. But when they're tiny and small, they're kind of cute, and they growl and they hiss and all that, but they can't do anything. That's the picture here. A lion cub acting like a big boy, but not really there yet. And so these soldiers are acting the same way. They will bluster and they will make it look like they're brave and strong, but when it comes down to it, they're hunkering down in their bunkers. Now, another reason why this occurs, why Babylon is taken so easily, why they do not defend the city is found in verse 39, page 557. The fall will come during a state of drunkenness. Verse 39, when they become heated up, I shall serve them their banquet and make them drunk, that they may become jubilant and may sleep a perpetual sleep and not wake up, declares the Lord.
And
like Cyrus. There you go. There's the parallel. Belshazzar was having his party. Everybody was reveling, and in came the Medo-Persians. And that's going to be similar with Babylon of the future. The defenders are not going to be in any condition to defend the city. Their judgment is totally impaired. Their courage gone. Their abilities gone. They're hiding out. And they will be slaughtered. They will sleep, point four, a perpetual sleep, point 4b, in other words, death. So this has not happened to Babylon of the present, but it will happen to Babylon of the future. Again, see the pattern? Babylon of the past was taken with this feature. This was part of the battle. Babylon of the future will experience the same thing. And Babylon was very famous for her drunkenness. You see the cross references in point B. And so these men hiding away in their bunkers in their stupor are slaughtered. Verse 40. I shall bring them down like lambs to the slaughter, like rams together with male goats. So the word picture here is the frightened cowards of Babylon are slaughtered like lambs at a sacrifice. They won't be able to resist the northern army. That did not happen in the past. It will happen in the future. And so the result, on page 558, is the desolation of Babylon. Again, repeated over and over again. He's pounding it into our heads. He wants us this to be part of our worldview. The desolation of Babylon. Verse 41. How Sheshach has been captured and the praise of the whole earth been seized. How Babylon has become an object of horror among the nations. Now those are two phrases that are parallel. Sheshach is parallel to Babylon. And the city that's the praise of the whole earth is parallel to an object of horror among the nations. It's antithetic parallelism. There are two contrasting statements there. And when we realize that this is parallelism, it makes it very easy to see that this word Sheshach, point one there, is simply an atbash for Babylon. Another one of these plays on words coming in. And you know what an atbash is. We talked about it last week, I think, or the week before. A simple substitution cipher for the Hebrew alphabet. But I thought we'd make it a little practical tonight. Remember how it works? If the first letter of your word happens to be the most right-hand letter of the Hebrew alphabet, you go over to the most left-hand letter and you choose that as the substitute, okay? So let's do an atbash on Bob, all right? So we start with what? With B? In the English alphabet, B is the second letter from the left. So we choose a substitute. That substitute will be the second letter from the right, the Y. Then we'll come down to the O, which I believe is the 15th letter from the left. And so we will come the 15th letter from the right, and that turns out to be an L. And then we go back to the B again, right? And so what comes out is Yuli. So, there's my name in Atbash, all right? Okay, that's how it works. So here we have Sheshach. Babylon has been taken. Notice point two, the praise of the whole earth is seized. Notice this is worldwide in scope. This is the world capital. This is not ancient Babylon, but this is the world capital. It's become a desolation among the nations. Why? Verse 42, it has been destroyed by an invasion, military invasion. Verse 42, the sea has come up over Babylon. She has been engulfed with its tumultuous waves. Remember, when a flood is used symbolically, when a flood is mentioned symbolically, it's a symbol of a military invasion. Here, the military invasion is pictured as the ocean, just the sea, coming up and covering Babylon in a great flood, covered by the multitude of the waves, covered by that army, destroyed by a military invasion. So the results of this flood, this invasion, verse 43, her cities have become an object of horror, a parched land, a desert, a land in which no man lives and through which no son of man passes. So we have three phrases describing these cities of Babylonia, Babylon, her suburbs and the cities of Babylonia, desolate, destroyed, a desert, and then the whole land of Babylonia, void of human beings. People don't even pass through there. They sure don't live there, and they don't even spend the night in a hotel there. They just don't go there at all. Haunt of demons. It hasn't happened yet. Plenty of people living in Babylon now, as many of our soldiers have experienced. All right, as we turn to page 559... our emphasis changes a little bit. We've been looking at the military and political side of the story. Now the emphasis is religious in nature. And in verse 44, we come to the judgment of Bel. Now, this is not Bel of Beauty and the Beast. She was a nice girl. I liked her. That's my favorite Disney animation. Okay? This is B-E-L. She's not French. Bel was one of the key gods of the Babylonians. One of the key gods of the Babylonians. So verse 44. Verse 44. I will punish Bel in Babylon. I shall make what he has swallowed come out of his mouth. Ugh, what a picture. And the nations will no longer stream to him. Even the wall of Babylon has fallen down. So there's going to be plenty of idol worship during the tribulation period. It's going to be a very ecumenical time. And so Bel will probably make a comeback. And finally, of course, Antichrist will say, you know, I want all this cool worship to be directed at me. So I'm going to march into the Holy of Holies and proclaim myself as God, right? That is probably when judgment comes upon Bel, when Babylon is destroyed during this whole sequence of events. Notice point three. The nations will not flow anymore to him. Babylon was the economic center, capital of the planet. Plenty of people came into Babylon and worshiped Bel. And point four, the wall of Babylon shall fall. Point A and B give you the dimensions of ancient Babylon's two walls. Ancient Babylon had an outer wall, 12 feet thick, and an inner wall, 21 feet thick. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think I'd make the outer wall 21 feet thick. Maybe they figured if they got through the 12-foot one, we're in big trouble. We better build better. It's probably economics. Probably a smaller wall. That's probably why they built it bigger. But anyway, Babylon of the past had these impressive walls. If Babylon of the future is rebuilt accurately, then it will have walls like this as well. So we'll see how the restoration of Babylon goes. See if they do it according to exactly the ruins that are there. And so building on the previous verses, we come to the fall of Babylon again. And the fall of Babylon is preceded by a message to the Jewish people. There's a message to Israel. So you see, God has not forsaken his people. We haven't come to faith in Yeshua yet. That won't happen for another 3.5 years. But God has not abandoned his people. He listens to our prayers. He is dealing with us. And so he sends out a message. Two aspects to the message. The first aspect is in verse 45. Verse 45. Come forth from her midst, my people, and each of you save yourselves from the fierce anger of the Lord. So we have a repetition of that command to get out of the city. We saw that last week or the week before. Primarily, this is issued to the Jewish people. If there's anyone in Babylon at this time that is coming to faith, any Gentile, I'm sure they'll listen to this warning as well. So they're told to leave the city and save themselves. What? From what? From the wrath and anger of God. So here we have an opportunity to respond in faith. God gives the command, but human beings are required to respond responsibly. We make responsible decisions. And so here they must choose to obey. So that's the first aspect of the message to Israel. The second aspect is not to fear in verse 46. Verse 46. Now, so that your heart does not grow faint, and you are not afraid at the report that will be heard in the land, for the report will come 1 year, and after that, another report in another year. And violence will be in the land, with ruler against ruler. So they're told not to be afraid, but to do something. First of all, they are to trust God and listen to the signs of the times. Listen to the tidings in your outline, point C. Pay attention to CNN. Pay attention to Fox News. Okay? Pay attention to the signs of the times. They will provide you adequate warning as to what is coming upon Babylon. Notice points 1 and 2. Tidings will come for 1 year. And after that, and in another year shall come tidings. In other words, listen to the news. Pay attention. What are they going to pay attention to? Here are the tidings. Here's the news during the tribulation. Point 3 and point 4. Violence in the land. Ruler against ruler. Civil war. So what is CNN going to be reporting? Fox News is going to be reporting that there are underground uprisings against Antichrist. Rebel forces gathering. Turmoil. Insurgency. We know all about that. Clashes with the Antichrist's armies and forces in different areas. The signs of the times. So point 5. Don't fear these circumstances. They are preceding the fall of Babylon. That's your warning that Babylon is about to go under. So pay attention, act wisely, act correctly, flee the region. Don't be paralyzed by fear. Don't say, oh, yeah, what am I going to do? There's war all over the place. Every 5 feet, there's a war. I could be ambushed. I could be killed. No. Make the responsible decision. Leave the city. That's the warning. That's the warning. Okay, you see the point there? All righty. I've got 759. So why don't we take our break, and we'll pick it up on page 560 on verse 47 in 15 minutes. Warning to Israel, the message to Israel, to flee Babylon, not to fear, but to act responsibly, keep your head on your shoulders, leave the city, pay attention to the signs of the times. What is the signs of the times proclaiming? Page 560, verse 47, they are warning you of the judgment on Babylon. Verse 47. Therefore, behold, days are coming. Again, therefore, why? Because of verse 46 and what went on before. Because of this warfare, because of this violence, this insurgency. The days are coming when I will punish the idols of Babylon, and her whole land will be put to shame, and all her slain will fall in her midst. Now, verse 47, the idea, the days come, puts our context into the prophetic future, into the tribulation period. That's the 13th time this phrase has come up in Jeremiah. So in the future, God is going to execute judgment, and this judgment will include the judgment upon the idols of Babylon, another summary statement describing the fall of the city, the destruction of the idolatry. Yes. Well, he's not really wasting his time on the idols. As he destroys the city, of course, the idols are destroyed as well, and that shows that they are useless and worthless. And, you know, mankind thinks that these idols are something, but God, when he crushes the city and crushes them, will prove that. Say again? Yes, he goes into the temple. Yeah, the tribulation period will be marked by a lot of religious syncretism. It'll be an ecumenical time. The ecclesiastical Babylon will be a conglomeration of all the religions of the world. You know, the way we're going today. You know, everybody has their own thing, and it's all equally valid. And then Antichrist, in the middle of the tribulation, will say, "I want all that attention focused on me." And that's when he goes into the Holy of Holies and proclaims himself to be God. Now, there's plenty of idols all over the world, and there's plenty of idols in Babylon. But he's saying, no, I want it to direct it at me. And this is before that happens, because this is the judgment on Babylon. After that happens, in quick succession, he will then move south to Jerusalem and destroy the city and enter the temple. This all happens in quick succession, but it's all happens around the same time. Yes. People who, well, yeah, in the tribulation period, there will be no gray areas. By the way, people who don't worship anything are worshiping themselves. They're called atheists. But in the tribulation period, we learn that there will be a point in time where everybody is required to accept or reject the Mark 666. Now, that Mark 666 is not a credit card or anything like that. It is a religious symbol, a symbol of commitment. And the book of Revelation tells us that whoever takes that mark, they're unable to be saved. Why? Because they have made their commitment to Antichrist. Whoever refuses the mark will be persecuted. Why? Because they are rejecting Antichrist. And those are the people that still have the chance to be saved. And they will be slaughtered. It'll be a time of great persecution. So there's going to be everything is going to be black or white in the tribulation. No more of the gray areas we have now.
Can't fake it.
Can't fake it. Yep. God will find you. There may be some exceptions, I don't know. But as far as I can tell from Revelation, you're going to have to take one side or the other. Okay. All righty. So God is going to execute the judgment upon the idols. He's going to show how useless they are. Just hunks of rock and clay. Now, some people will mourn over the destruction of Babylon. We've seen that. But there will be a different reaction from another group of people. And that brings us to verse 48 and point C, the rejoicing over the fall of Babylon. Verse 48. Then heaven and earth and all that is in them will shout for joy over Babylon, for the destroyers will come to her from the north, declares the Lord. So this is worldwide in scope. All heavens and the earth, all creation, rejoices in this final destruction of the city and all that it stands for. Jews, Gentiles, angels, singing for joy when they see the smoke of Babylon rising up. Point two describes why they burst into song. The destroyers, plural, a coalition led by the Medes, comes from the north to do the job. Destroyers come at her from the north, that northern coalition. And in Revelation 18, this rejoicing is also mentioned. Revelation 18, 19, and 20. The mourning is in verse 19, and they threw dust on their heads. And we're crying out, weeping. What have I done with my pointer here? There it is. Weeping and mourning and saying, woe, woe, the great city in which all who had ships at sea became rich by her wealth, for in 1 hour she has been laid waste. So there's the kings and the merchants and the shipping magnates. Remember that last week? All mourning over the destruction of the city. But now we move into verse 20. Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you saints and apostles and prophets, because God has pronounced judgment for you against her. So Jeremiah gives us a little peek into the same event that Revelation describes in verse 18. Babylon is destroyed, and those who love God will rejoice. Now moving down to point D, verse 49, we come to the primary reason for the fall. There's many, many reasons why Babylon is destroyed by God, because of her sin, her idol worship, her pride, her arrogance, etc. But there's one key reason that overshadows them all, and that is anti-Semitism, the treatment of the Jewish people. Verse 49. Indeed, Babylon is to fall for the slain of Israel, as also for Babylon the slain of all the earth have fallen. Now the point is in parentheses 1 and 2. As Babylon has caused Jewish people to be slain, so Babylon in turn will be slain. This is the principle of the Abrahamic covenant, Genesis 12:3. Those who curse you, I will curse. And Babylon will definitely be cursing the Jewish people. And so recompense will come upon her, Also, we always need to remember Galatians 6:7. Be not deceived, God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, this he will also reap. And Babylon has sowed anti-Semitism. Babylon will reap destruction. Or as the world states it, what goes around comes around. You have some guy in your office say that. You say, I didn't know you knew the Bible. I did. I don't know the Bible. What's that? No, Galatians 6:7. Here, let me show you. Now, you've got some room at the bottom of the page there. I want to explore the question, why is anti-Semitism the foundational reason for Babylon's destruction? Why is anti-Semitism so important? I mean, aren't there other reasons? Well, that's part of it, yep. That's part of it, definitely. That's right of it. Part of it's the Abrahamic covenant. We saw that back in point one. But I'm going to give you 4 points to keep in mind here. Because anti-Semitism does not make sense unless you get down to the spiritual level. I remember years ago Susan saying to me, you know, I don't understand this, Bob. Why in the world is everybody always after the Jews, you know? Well, we have to get down to the spiritual level to understand why. Point one, then. The first point you have to remember is that anti-Semitism is motivated by Satan. Anti-Semitism is motivated by Satan. That's the first basic principle we always have to keep in mind. That's the root. That's the foundation. That's where we have to go. Secondly, why is Satan so mad at the Jewish people? Well, because God has made promises with the Jewish people. He's made 4 unconditional and eternal promises with the Jewish people. 4 of them. First covenant, the first promise is the Abrahamic covenant. Through the Abrahamic covenant, he established the nation. That's the beginning of the Jewish people right there. Abrahamic covenant. Then he entered into the land covenant with us. The land covenant established where this nation would reside. It established the boundaries of this nation, the territory of this nation. So we have the Abrahamic covenant establishing the nation to begin with, the land covenant establishing the residence of the nation. The third covenant was the Davidic covenant, in which God established the leadership of the nation, Messiah King. Third covenant, the Davidic covenant, that God established the leadership of the nation, Messiah King, King Messiah. And the fourth covenant is the new covenant, in which God establishes the holiness or the salvation of the nation, because the essence of the new covenant is salvation from sin. So salvation of the nation. So we got the Abrahamic covenant establishing the nation. We got the land covenant establishing the residence of the nation. We have the Davidic covenant establishing the leadership of the nation. And we have the new covenant establishing the salvation of the nation. Point three. Okay. Where are we? Where are we? Who's the... Okay, this is point three. This is point three, Bonnie. All right, everybody ready for point three? Once these promises are fulfilled, Satan knows he's burnt toast in the lake of fire. Once these promises are fulfilled, Satan's career is over. Over with. Lake of fire. That's his final resting place, his final abode. If any one of these covenants are not perfectly fulfilled, he can accuse God of being a liar, he can accuse God of being weak, and he can say, I'm equal to you. You know, he wants to be God. That's one of his five I wills in the book of Isaiah. He wants to be God. And he knows that if these promises are fulfilled, his career is over. Now, someone in the morning class asked, well, Bob, doesn't he know the scripture? Doesn't he understand that he loses? And I say, yeah, and it's kind of hard to explain, but the only way I could explain it would be to use the example of our speed limits. That's a good enough example. We have a 65-mile-an-hour speed limit out here, right? And we all get trained that that's the speed limit. We all get told what the penalty we do will be if we break, go 100 miles an hour and get pulled over. We all know that. But you got these guys running down the freeway at 100 miles an hour, right? They're not ignorant of what they're doing. But they just, they're so wrapped up in their own pride, they're so wrapped up in themselves that they think, I'll never get caught. It'll never happen to me. I can beat the system. That's what they're thinking. That's what all people who break the rules think. And so Satan's so wrapped up in himself, pride was the reason for his fall, he actually thinks he can beat the system. He doesn't believe it. He knows it intellectually, but he doesn't believe it. That's the only explanation I can give. Okay? Question.
Does he have any choice? So, I mean, he's really God's devil, right? I mean, God created,
You can't be saved.
I know he's on a leash.
Well, he is a creature. He is a creature, and he's not given free rein. No, he doesn't have just free rein. He is still under God's control. And the Lord is allowing all this sin issue to work itself out. And he will, when the sin issue is dealt with, everything will be right. And then we'll move into a new phase of existence. You know, this is the whole reason we're going through all this stuff on this little blue marble that we live on is to deal with the sin issue once and for all. Okay? Now, so the conflict then is centered around this tiny little people on this tiny little postage stamp in the Middle East. Okay? Because if the Jewish people can be destroyed, the promises can never be fulfilled. Okay? If the Jewish people can be destroyed, the promises can never be fulfilled. Question?
Yeah. Talking to him in heaven.
Right. Well, that's the same situation as we are in today.
Yeah. So that would be the case today.
Yeah.
So during the tribulation time period, how will Satan's access to God be at that point?
Well, we're told in the book of Revelation that he's cast down to the earth and he knows his time is short, and so he's furious against the Jewish people. So his. Yeah, basically, that would probably coincide exactly with the beginning of the tribulation. So his access is restricted more and more and more. Finally, he will be put into the abyss, and then the lake of fire will be his eternal abode. Okay, so he is only a creature, but he won't accept that fact. Okay?
Yeah, with regard to Satan, I view it this way. I think that malignant narcissism cannot cure malignant narcissism.
Right, there you go. yeah, exactly.
A sick mind can't cure your sick mind.
Exactly. There you go. And that's the only way you can explain his knowledge and yet his response to it. And this whole battle is being fought over, again, this tiny little people, over this tiny little postage stamp of a land, on this tiny little planet, this tiny little blue dust speck in the middle of this vast cosmos. And why is that happening? Because in God's view of things, size is not the important quality, it's quality. It's what's going on there. So even though this people is very small, even though this land is very small, even though this little planet is very small, this is the most important spots of the universe. Folks, believe me, there's no one out there. We are it. We are it on this privileged planet. And they're not going to find anybody out there, okay? And God is willing to work this all out on this little dust speck so that sin can be dealt with. When sin is dealt with and the whole issue is finished, we enter into what? A new heavens and a new earth. A new realm of existence.
How do you know there's no other somebody's.
They're not. There isn't, because this is where sin is being taken care of, right here. Believe me, there's nobody out there.
if somewhere it tells us that, that's what I was asking.
Well, there's no indication in Scripture that there's any other creatures like man anywhere. He made the heavens and the earth. His focus has always been the earth. He never gives us any statement. He talks about the universe freely and how vast it is and how he's the controller of the universe, but he never speaks of anyone else being out there. He only speaks of planet Earth.
He became man. He didn't become alien.
Yeah, he didn't become, what do you call it? What was Spock? What was Vulcan? He didn't become a Vulcan, yeah. Okay, one more question or two, and then we'll move on. Right, there you go. His only begotten son was a man, right? A human being. He said that God had only one only begotten son, one unique son, so he can't have a Vulcan as a son. He has a human being as a son. So anyway, all right. Verse 3, now we're talking about why is anti-Semitism so important? Why does it? Why is this conflict going on? It's motivated by Satan because God has made promises to the Jewish people. If these promises to the are fulfilled, Satan's career is over. So point 4, I already made that point. Destroying the Jewish people means God has failed to keep his promises as Satan is safe. Destroying the Jewish people means that God has failed to keep his promises and Satan is safe. So that's why the treatment of the Jews is so important. That's why it's so important. That's why Hitler wanted to destroy the entire Jewish community. He was motivated by Satan. And by the way, if you go research it out, if you go to genocide.org, I think it is, or genocide.com, something like that. I once went to that website, and it chronicles all the genocides that have happened in the history of man, that in recorded history. And you know, the Holocaust and World War II of the Jewish people is not one of the biggest ones. It's kind of an average genocide. Why don't we hear about all the others? Why don't we hear about them? Because, and I'm not diminishing them, because the Holocaust aimed at the Jewish people is the one that concerns God the most. You know, Satan, killing people off is Satan's joy. He loves to bring destruction and death and all that. But when he focuses on the apple of God's eye, that's important. That's critical. Okay. So we hear about the Holocaust over and over and over again. But there's many, many Holocausts that were a lot bigger than what we went through, because this one dealt with the destruction of God's people. Okay. Okay. Okay, well, let's move on then. The reason. Okay. One more question.
Repeat number four.
Destroying the Jewish people means God has failed to keep his promises. If Satan can destroy the Jewish people, that means God has failed to keep his promises and Satan is safe. He's safe. All righty. Now, page 561. Our attention now turns to the Jewish people who are responding properly to the warning that God has given. So we have a message to the Jewish exiles. We start with verse 50. You who have escaped the sword, depart, do not stay. Remember the Lord from afar and let Jerusalem come to your mind. So very clearly, these are the Jewish people that have escaped the destruction of Babylon. And they are told not to stand around and gawk at the smoke rising behind them. They're not to stand around in confusion, but they're to go somewhere. They're to go somewhere with a message, point 2a. They are to remember the Lord, and then point 2b, go to Jerusalem and warn your brothers. And we saw that earlier, that these people will become Zionists. Let's go tell everybody in Jerusalem. This is going to happen very quickly. Be a quick sequence of events here. But get to Jerusalem as fast as you can and warn your brothers. But we see that Israel is confused at this point in time in history. And we'll have to explain that confusion. The confusion shows up in verse 51. We are ashamed because we have heard reproach. Disgrace has covered our faces. For aliens have entered the holy places of the Lord's house.
Uh-huh.
Notice the temple, huh? Jan is paying attention. Okay. All right. Notice Israel's response. I hope I can get through this class. I might have to quit. You know, we might run out of time here. That'll be a first, that the morning class put in more material than the evening class. Okay. The Israel's response. These are the response of those who have escaped Babylon. They say, "We are confounded. We've heard reproach." See, they're confused. Confusion has covered our faces. Now, why? Well, one aspect why they're distressed and confused is because strangers have come into the Lord's house. And so the tribulation temple, we know, will be desecrated during the tribulation period. And so somehow this is related. They realize that this distress and confusion is related to the temple. Now, why? Why would this be the case? Well, I think we need to look into some of the background of Jeremiah 51:51. And we know that the abomination of desolation is set up in the middle of the tribulation, but why does that cause confusion? Well, that causes confusion because we'll start with Daniel 9:27, because the Jewish people sign a covenant with Antichrist. It's a seven-year covenant in Daniel 9:27. Here's what Daniel says. "And he," Antichrist, "will make a firm covenant with many for 1 week." And in the context there, it's 7 years. So he's going to make a covenant with many in Israel, not with everybody. The faithful remnant will refuse. He'll make a seven-year covenant. But what is he going to do in the middle of that covenant? He's going to break it. In the middle of the week, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. And then he will bring the abomination of desolation upon the temple. Now, we learn about the covenant in Daniel 9:27, but in Isaiah 28, verses 15 through 18, we learn about the confidence that the many in Israel who signed that covenant have in its institution. Isaiah 28, 15 through 18. Here's what the many are saying. Or I should say, here's God's view of the covenant. God speaking to the many in Israel says, "Because you have said, 'We have made a covenant with death, and with Sheol we have made a pact. The overwhelming scourge will not reach us when it passes by, for we have made falsehood our refuge, we have concealed ourselves with deception.'" So the many who enter into this covenant feel it is a covenant of security. We are not going to be killed. We are secure. When the overwhelming scourge, and that's a picture of a military invasion, when a military invasion comes, it won't touch us. We've been very clever. We have a refuge. The problem here is that the Jewish people have entered into a covenant with the Antichrist. How dare we enter into a covenant with the Antichrist? We're supposed to be entering into covenants with God. We're supposed to be God's covenant people, not entering into a covenant with Him and believing it's going to give us security. What does God think of this? How does He respond to this thinking that we have refuge, we have security, we're safe? Here's what He says. Next verse. "Therefore, because of your attitude, because of your trust in this covenant, therefore, thus says the Lord God, behold, I am laying in Zion a stone, a tested stone, a costly cornerstone for the foundation, firmly placed. He who believes in it will not be disturbed. I will make justice the measuring line and righteousness the level, and then hail will sweep away the refuge of lies, and the waters will overflow the secret place." He responds to this attitude by uttering a messianic prophecy. "Israel, I am going to bring the Messiah, your true stone. And if you trust in Him, if you believe in Him, then you are truly safe. He is your true refuge." And then He speaks of judgment. "I will bring justice and righteousness and sweep away the lies that you have established for yourself." He finishes up by making this statement: your covenant with death will be canceled, and your pact with Sheol will not stand. When the overwhelming scourge passes through, then you will become its trampling place. And that's a description of the middle of the tribulation. Antichrist breaks his covenant. And in Matthew 24, 15, and 16, he sets up the abomination of desolation. And then in 2 Thessalonians 2, 3, and 4, he takes his seat in the temple of God, displaying himself to be God. This is the background to the confusion in verse 51. The covenant that many are trusting in is broken, and the temple is desecrated.
So in that first one that you had, that Isaiah one that you had up there, that first Isaiah one, when they're saying we've made a covenant with death,
right?
That's probably they know that there's going to be death if they don't make.
If they don't make the covenant, yes, the overwhelming scourge, the military invasion, is going to destroy them. Okay, there's a need for security.
So they think that they conceal themselves. What does that mean? We've made falsehood our refuge, mm-hmm, and conceal ourselves with deception.
Yeah, they think they're pretty clever, that they've somehow avoided this catastrophe that they see.
But why would they say that? I mean, I can see God saying that to them, but why would they say that?
Yeah, I don't know why they feel that. Why they would make these statements.
I wonder if they're making these statements because they made the covenant, and yet it's like, you know, with your fingers crossed behind your back when you were a kid.
Well, that's the idea. That seems to be the idea. We're pretty clever.
Yeah.
We've managed to enter into this this security agreement.
Yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've managed to enter into the security agreement. Yeah. Yeah. That's the idea there. So that's about all we can say there. Well, how it works itself out, we will see. Yes, Bing.
It sounds to me like it would be God is rewording what they have said. If they said we've made a covenant, he's saying, yeah, you made a covenant with death.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think.
Putting words in their mouth.
Well, no, I don't. I wouldn't.
You say that, for we have made falsehood our refuge. See, they didn't really say that. He's saying what you're saying is this.
Well, I think what they're saying is here: we've made a covenant so we can avoid death. Okay. We've made a covenant so we can avoid death. We can avoid this overwhelming scourge, and we are pretty clever. We have managed to bring security to ourselves.
Right.
You know, I think that's what they're saying there. Okay. Anyway, this is the background, because there's a dependence on this covenant, and it gets broken, and they're confused. What's going on here? Well, God answers this confusion in page 562. On 562, he speaks to the confusion, and basically he repeats over and over again that, not to worry, I am bringing judgment upon Babylon. That is the answer. Verse 52. Therefore, behold, days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will punish her idols, and the mortally wounded will groan throughout her land. Again, the prophetic future in the tribulation. So he assures the people that Babylon and her idolatry and all that will be judged. Don't be confused. I'm bringing judgment upon Babylon, even though it looks a little scary at the moment. This judgment, in verse 53, is inescapable. Verse 53. Though Babylon should ascend to the heavens, and though she should fortify her lofty stronghold, from me destroyers will come to her, declares the Lord. So he lifts up a hypothetical situation here. Even if Babylon could exalt herself far above what she is to try and compete with God personally, still he would bring her down. And point C, he talks about many destroyers. It's in the plural. Again, a reference to that coalition army. And so in point 22, we see that recompense will come fully to Babylon. Finally, she will receive the just recompense. Verse 54. The sound of an outcry from Babylon and of great destruction from the land of the Chaldeans. So here we hear a cry of agony from the city. Three reasons for the cry. We begin in verse 55. For the Lord is going to destroy Babylon, and he will make her loud noise vanish from her, and her waves will roar like many waters. The tumult of their voices sounds forth. So the first reason for the cry is God's destruction of Babylon. This invasion, bottom of the page, military invasion that destroys her. Again, the waves and the flood symbolizing a military invasion. Page 563. The second reason for the cry. Second reason for the cry. Verse 56, first part of the verse. For the destroyer is coming against her, against Babylon, and her mighty men will be captured. Their bows are shattered. And so the second reason, the destroyer. And this time it's singular, point D, referring to the Medes, that nation leading the coalition. And then the third reason for the cry finishes up the verse. For the Lord is a God of recompense. He will fully repay. And so the third reason for the cry, justice, appropriate justice is finally being meted out on Babylon. And as this justice comes down, we see the effect upon the leaders of Babylon. Verse 57. I shall make her princes and her wise men drunk, her governors, her prefects, and her mighty men, that they may sleep a perpetual sleep and not wake up, declares the Lord, declares the king, whose name is the Lord of hosts. So again, this reference to making the leaders drunk. These men will be senseless. They will not be able to make good decisions, responsible decisions. God will not make them drunk by pouring out his wrath upon them. And their future, the result of this, of drinking the wrath of God, is death. And then in verse 58, we finally come to the end of the prophecy against Babylon. We come to the destruction of the city. Verse 58. Thus says the Lord of hosts, the broad wall of Babylon will be completely razed, and her high gates will be set on fire. So the peoples will toil for nothing, and the nations become exhausted only for fire. So again, as we turn to the next page, we see the destruction coming upon Babylon. And notice again, parentheses number 4. This destruction is worldwide in scope. The nations are affected by the destruction of Babylon. And finally, she is a ruin never to rise again. Now that brings us to point 23 on your outline. We have finished our prophecy against Babylon, and we move into Jeremiah's time frame again, and we come to his 10th symbolic action. He's had to perform a number of symbolic actions throughout this book. This is the last one. But we will call it quits right here, and we'll pick that up next week, point 23, in the middle of page 564 with verse 59. All right, so let me go ahead and pray.